Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Yeah, am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Bitcoin represents economic armor. When you put on the suit of armor, no mayor, no government, no collectivist, no socialist can debank you. They can't take your money away. They can't impoverish you. Just like a gun is a deterrent, Bitcoin is a deterrent, because if you have wealth in Bitcoin, you have the option to move it to any jurisdiction and you can keep it, and no one can take it away from you via force of violence, no matter where you are on Earth. Satoshi gave us an opportunity. I hope I intrigue all of you with the opportunity and you go do the research and determine for yourself how you benefit from it. But I just leave you with the thought that Bitcoin is economic armor.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is a deterrent and it is economic armor. And welcome to the Tokens Radio Show. It's Tuesday, March the 4th.
It is.
And thank you for listening to us tonight while our president is giving an address to the rest of the country. So if you do sign off and go, whoops, I forgot about that, we completely understand.
Yes, but you can always come back.
Yes, indeed. Come back.
Come back.
We're broadcasting from the studios at KCNR in Redding, California, here on the dial at 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, and online at KCNR1460.com, where we're streaming all the shows all the time. And
yes,
you pick up archive shows right there. And you could follow us on X at Tokens Radio Show for updates and commentary. And we've got Ben in the house.
Good evening, Ben.
How are you?
Good evening, ladies.
Yes. Thank you for being here. He does such a great job.
Yeah, he does. He keeps us out of trouble.
Well, he's here early, which is really
nice.
And we can set up, and it's just really chill, and we just really appreciate
it. And go
that.
Over everything.
You're
and
awesome.
Make sure, yeah.
We want to make sure we run smooth when the show comes
yes,
on.
Yes, so. Indeed. Thank you so much.
Yes, we appreciate that greatly.
Yeah.
No problem.
So is Bitcoin our most underestimated invention? What do you think, Linda?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's starting to change, though, in the last couple of days.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
I still think it's our most underestimated invention because we still don't know everything we need to know about it.
That's true. Everybody's learning. I don't care. You know, we've talked about it before, which makes it nice. Everybody's on a different level. Everybody's still learning, though. It's not like one person has all the knowledge of Bitcoin.
That's true. Yeah.
And the systems.
Yeah.
And the mining and all the other stuff that comes with it.
Well, having said that, while prices fluctuate, insiders remain bullish on its future, even though we've had some dips.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to explore Bitcoin's potential evolution into a decentralized global computing network, examine BlackRock's game-changing ETF success.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing how they've come around. And dive into what crypto holders need to know about IRS scrutiny. President Trump's recent announcement of a U.S. crypto strategic reserve, including Bitcoin, Ethereum, XRP, Solana, and Cardano validates what we've discussed in previous shows about cryptocurrency's growing importance in our national financial strategy.
I'm sure there's a reason he did that.
Yeah,
we'll find out. It's just waiting.
Yes.
Sometimes, you know. I heard ETH, it was like, ooh,
yeah.
You know.
It almost hurt.
Yeah, it almost did.
We're also going to cover the intriguing dividend
doggy
proposal and how AI's growing energy demands could reshape mining operations. The Treasury Department's suspension of the beneficial ownership information reporting requirements, adds another positive development to the crypto landscape we've been talking about and tracking. And the digital revolution continues, so let's get a market update and a word from our sponsor.
All right. So Bitcoin, with everything going on, What took a dip a little bit. We're at $87,487.20.
That's a buy opportunity.
I know. It's like, can you go down on the front?
Yeah.
Yeah. IBIT ETF is $49.39. ETH is $2,179.17, so $2,179. XRP is $2.47. MicroStrategy is $275.15.
Yeah, what a great time. Well, it was down, what, to
83?
Yeah, I thought it hit, yeah, right
it
around
might have
in
been
that
down
range.
A little
yeah,
bit 82 lower than 80
or so.
Through,
yeah,
83.
Yeah.
Still, yeah, some of us are going, go a little lower, go a little lower.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. All right. Our friends at the Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators, sponsors today's show. Their carefully cultivated unique strands offer elevated experience with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
Well, in a world where major innovations are rare, how do we respond to truly revolutionary technology? Peter Thiel explains why Bitcoin, despite being a significant breakthrough, was initially difficult to comprehend and consequently underestimate it. Let's hear Thiel's insights on this phenomenon. So here he is.
All right.
Tech stagnation is that when something does happen, we don't even know how to process it. So, you know, I think Bitcoin was a big invention. We can debate whether it was good or bad, but it was a pretty big deal, and it was systematically underestimated for at least, you know, the first 10, 11 years. You know, you could trade it. It went up smoothly for 10, 11 years. It didn't get repriced all at once because we're in a world where nothing big ever happens, and so we have no way of processing it when something pretty big happens. The internet was pretty big in 99. Bitcoin was moderately big. The internet was really big. Bitcoin was moderately big. And I'd say passing the Turing test is really big. It's on the same scale as the internet.
And a major invention that people underestimate it for its first decade.
Yeah. I wonder why we struggle with it. What do you think? With technology, is it because it's so new, the fear of it? What do you think?
I don't know. He suggests that when significant changes are rare, something as disruptive as Bitcoin, it becomes really hard to process. You know, despite growing in value for many years now, 15 years, most people missed its significance.
Yeah. And what do you think? I'm looking at, you know, Bitcoin and its innovations. How does that come? I wonder how we could compare it to other technology.
I don't know. It's not as impactful as the internet. It's huge, though.
Yeah, it's definitely huge and getting bigger all the time.
Yeah. This decentralized technology is removing the state's power to control currency through printing money.
And that's a big deal. We've talked about that many times. And, you know, then we have to stop and look at our governments and stuff, and we're seeing it, how governments are responding to this innovation.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying that they might benefit from embracing it rather than fighting it. I mean, we've talked about the four rules before, and, you know, eventually they join it, and this is where we're at right now, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked about the revolutionary part of Bitcoin. That it encompasses more than just the financial piece. What do you think?
I think it redefines our understanding of computations, ownership, digital infrastructure.
Yeah,
it's challenging big tech and reshaping the internet itself, I think.
Yeah. So, when someone dismisses Bitcoin as just another tech trend, remember this. The most transformative innovations are often the ones we initially fail to understand.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Oh, my goodness. I have the guy's, why am I losing his, I'm having problems with names today.
You
I
are.
Don't know why, but in any case, one of our beloved influencers in the space was talking about just, to this point about tech stagnation and how we just underestimate this value of Bitcoin. And it took him a number of years before he came around and was able to start discussing it. James Lavish is somebody else who, a name I can remember, is also somebody else there who has had a turnaround and the light bulb went off. Michael Saylor, our beloved cheerleader in Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, I go to Rich Dad Poor Dad too. It took a while for him.
Yeah.
I know he's not one of your favorites, but he is in the financial piece. But it took him a while.
Yeah.
For him to see the light come on. And then when it did, he went full force with it, basically.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
So I'd say we're a little bit that like that, too.
That's true, because remember in the beginning, we weren't all the way on board with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
We had to have certain things happen before we got wise on some stuff.
We had to have some rug pulls.
Yeah. Okay. Wasn't going to say it, but you did, and it's true.
All right.
Well, headlines scream about Bitcoin's recent price drop. Insiders at last week's Bitcoin Investor Week remain surprisingly calm. They're not sweating the correction, but they are watching how artificial intelligence, AI, could reshape Bitcoin mining. Here's what they're saying. According to Phil Rosen, Rosen, co-founder of Opening Bell Daily, Bitcoin's recent slide hasn't dampened spirits at Bitcoin Investor Week. Despite falling 16% over 5 days and sitting 27% below its all-time high, industry insiders remain unfazed.
Yeah.
Rosen observed that miners, fund manager, crypto enthusiasts responded with shrugs, viewing the drop as a buying opportunity, like we were saying at the beginning.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, the sentiment is clear. Current market movement is mere noise compared to positive fundamentals. With a crypto-friendly White House, yes.
Yeah.
Lighter regulations, yes. And growing institutional adoption, many believe conditions are more favorable than previous years.
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The real concern, Rosen noted, isn't price volatility, but a potential threat to Bitcoin's decentralized nature. Discussions at the event focus on how AI's growing energy consumption could impact mining operations, potentially squeezing out smaller miners and leading to dangerous centralization, a far more worrying prospect than any temporary price correction.
Yeah.
And that's true. And I didn't think of it too much till we were diving in and getting some information and looking at headlines this week about the mining piece.
Right.
It's very huge. And the impact it could have is.
Yeah, our next piece, we're going to be talking about that. I mean, it's probably a great segue to it. It's the rising energy appetite of AI, artificial intelligence, presents a real threat to Bitcoin's foundational structure, like Linda was just alluding to. First is AI data centers and training models consume more power. Energy costs are climbing, potentially squeezing out smaller Bitcoin miners who already struggle against larger operations. Who was it? Sam Altman was talking about his bringing out GPT 4.5.
Right, yeah.
But there's a shortage of GPUs. it's a problem. Second.
Definitely.
This could trigger concerning domino effect. If smaller miners can't compete, mining operations would concentrate among only the larger, well-capitalized ones. Such centralization makes Bitcoin more controlled, which is a big concern, and vulnerable, precisely what the cryptocurrency was designed to avoid. And third, and most importantly, for those who value Bitcoin's decentralized nature, this AI-driven consolidation poses a far greater risk than any temporary price fluctuations. The core question is, Can a Bitcoin maintain its distributed security model in a world where AI and crypto increasingly compete for the same energy resources? As we look ahead, the Bitcoin community faces a crucial question. Can innovation keep pace with these energy challenges, or emerging challenges, I should say? And some insiders suggest mining operations powered by stranded or renewable energy sources could maintain decentralization despite AI's growing energy demands. And others point to potential protocol changes that might level the playing field. That was always a concern, you know, in the 51% attack. I mean, if you have, it's too centralized. So what's clear is that Bitcoin has weathered many storms, from regulatory crackdowns to market crashes. This intersection with AI presents a new type of challenge. It is very interesting.
It is.
And the community's response will determine whether Bitcoin fulfills its original promise of true decentralization or becomes another concentrated financial asset. I think we're getting at those crossroads. And so for Bitcoin's most devoted believers, that's what truly matters, far more than any headline about price. And we talked about Sam Altman. He says the exhausted GPU, and he has no more space or processing capability. He needs more chips.
Needs more chips. And I wonder, we talked about it before coming on the air, about, you know, the Taiwan company that's coming over, if that's going to be part of this equation or not.
Mm. Well, I think they have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we were talking, I think we have it farther down in the segment. We'll just tease it a little bit about what Bitcoin mining centers are going to be doing to meet that demand.
Right. Next, we're examining some intriguing, now-deleted social media posts from Major Jason Lowry, the Space Force strategist known for his book Soft War, which explores cryptocurrency through a military lens. These posts were part of an online discussion that grew tense before disappearing from public view. Let's begin by reading what Major Lowry wrote before these posts vanished. End quotes. We are still very early in our understanding of the theoretical computer science behind reusable proof-of-work networks. Digital gold theory will get the price of Bitcoin to 1 million per coin by 2030. But the real fun starts after that, when the public begins to understand, and digital gold is simply an abstraction we use today to
conceptualize
the operational implementation, get the words out, of reusable proof of work known as Bitcoin. In a few years, as Bitcoin becomes universally recognized as the most secure method for transmitting and storing financial data. New, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
These fragments reveal Lowry believes we're just beginning to understand the computer science behind reusable proof-of-work networks, and that's in quotes. While many use Bitcoin as an investment, Lowry frames it as something far more significant. He predicts digital gold theory will push Bitcoin to 1 million per coin by around 2030.
Well, Saylor's been saying that too.
Yes, he has.
I don't recall him saying by 2030, but he's pushing the million-dollar figure.
Yeah. But he suggests this is just the beginning, a simple way to understand a deeper technological breakthrough. Golly.
Mm-hmm.
The real revolution comes after the price milestone. Lowry hints Bitcoin will eventually become universally recognized as the most secure method for transmitting and storing financial data, triggering innovations we can barely imagine today. Recent analysis proposes Bitcoin could evolve into what some call a Bitcoin Internet, or Element Zero.
Hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Forming the foundation for a decentralized global computing network.
Wow.
Some experts think Bitcoin's blockchain could function as a universal, unchangeable zero point for digital systems, creating a global computer where data, applications, and value transfers happen without the middleman.
Oh, I see that happening already.
Yeah. Bitcoin blocks might eventually contain non-arbitrary tokens representing new forms of digital property.
Mm-hmm.
Most interestingly, could be repurposed to secure not just money transfers, but all kinds of computing tasks, potentially turning Bitcoin into a global supercomputer resistant to censorship.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's you can't. My mind can't really get wrapped around it in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Why Lowry's post disappeared remains unknown. What is fallout from an online disagreement? Orders from military superiors concerned about a high-ranking officer making technological predictions, or something else entirely. Whatever the reason, Lowry's deleted prophecy alongside these emergent theories about Bitcoin's future utility shows a technology whose potential may be vastly underestimated by those who see it merely as a digital gold.
So the mystery behind that is that there were a number of posts that Lowry had made expanding on this theory of zero point and element zero. And there were some people that took issue with him, and he ended up getting on a Spaces. And the person who got on Spaces were just disputing everything he says. And he says, I'm quoting out of my book, Software. And he asked, didn't you read it? And this is a commentator, a writer of some sort who does articles. And he says, no, I didn't. And so he shut down the Spaces immediately, and it caused a brouhaha. So I'm not sure if Lowry did his job and by stirring up people on X, and he deleted all of his posts.
Right.
The next post that's on there from 2024 now,
except
for a space launch. Anything to do with Bitcoin is now gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
I find it interesting because he's done that in the past.
Yes,
not
he
necessarily
has.
He went away on his own, but you know, he comes in, he wrote his book, Software, and then he kind of went away for a while, and it's interesting that he drops, but I don't remember him actually going back and deleting, or let me rephrase that.
Yeah.
We don't know if he did, but having the post actually disappear.
Yeah, they had been deleted by the poster.
Yeah.
That's what it said.
Oh, is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that clears that up.
Yep. So he may have received orders or mission accomplished. We don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
but we got the information and we put it out there.
Well, in a recent meeting at the heart of Washington, D.C., the newly appointed SEC Commissioner Hester Peirce hosted Bitcoin pioneer and strategy chairman Michael Saylor. Just, Michael Saylor happened to be in the neighborhood and popped on in to talk to Commissioner Peirce. The conversation remains private, but what followed speaks volumes about the potential future of digital assets in America. Saylor subsequently released his digital assets framework document. It's a comprehensive blueprint for how the United States could position itself at the forefront of the digital economy revolution. So imagine this, Linda. He's just in town, right? And he goes, hey, Commissioner Peirce, have you read my document? Can I just leave this with you?
And you can see him doing
it. Oh, absolutely.
You know, bouncing around, you know.
Yeah. So this framework in the digital assets framework arrives at a crucial moment as Commissioner Peirce has promised greater clarity for crypto industry and has long felt it was treated unfairly by regulators. And the framework outlines a vision built on three foundational pillars. First, it calls for clear taxonomy on digital assets, distinguishing between digital commodities, securities, and currencies to create a consistent language for policymakers and innovators.
That's what we've been
wanting.
Yeah.
Yes. Second, it establishes clear rights and responsibilities for all market participants, from issuers to exchangers to individual owners. And this framework aims to build a legitimacy and trust in a market that has struggled with both. And then finally, Saylor advocates for rational compliance, standardized disclosures, and industry-led processes that protect investors without stifling innovation, which is really all we've seen the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And the end game, what is that? What Saylor calls a capital markets renaissance, with America leading the charge into a new digital frontier. So as the crypto world watches with cautious optimism, the meeting between Pierce and Saylor may one day be remembered as the moment when digital assets truly began their journey from the financial fringe to the economic mainstream. You can view the document on Michael Saylor's website. It's simply named michael.com, and it's prominently posted on there, and we encourage you to go ahead and take a peek at it.
All right, and with that, I think we'll go ahead and take a break. You are listening to Token's Radio Show on 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
Every day, your life is filled with choices, and when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
But join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Good day. Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, to provide the latest local updates. A lawsuit filed by Rebecca McClelland against the Reading Police Department is progressing toward a July trial. McClelland alleges former officer Jacob Provencio conducted an inappropriate search during a 2020 DUI stop, including unwanted touching and making her search for her keys while handcuffed. McClelland claims Provencio continued contacting her afterward via text and voicemail. An internal investigation sustained 3 of her 4 complaints regarding improper procedure and safety violations. No DUI charges were filed against McClelland. Provencio, who left the department in 2023, had previously faced multiple complaints resulting in over $140,000 in lawsuit settlements. McClelland is seeking $5 million in damages and states the incident has affected her mentally and emotionally. She and her attorney plan to present witnesses with similar experiences involving Provencio over the past decade. Sierra Pacific Industries is expanding its wildfire prevention with a $75 million initiative in California and Oregon. Building on a $40 million already invested in fuel breaks on their land, the company is now extending protection to federal lands and communities. CEO Mark Emerson announced a stewardship agreement with the USDA and Forest Service to place strategic fuel breaks on national forests. These 800-foot-wide breaks reduce fuel loads, forcing fires to the ground when they reach these barriers. The project spans 400 miles across 26,000 acres in 23 zones, with CAL FIRE and Forest Service determining optimal locations. Emerson cited past successes, including stopping the 2024 Park Fire and the devastating Camp Fire. The company has committed to both installing and maintaining these breaks long-term. Shasta County has secured approximately $45 million through California's Community Schools Partnership Program, implementing Governor Newsom's Mental Health for All initiative across 30 schools in three cohorts from 2022 to 2029. Supporters view the initiative as an integrated approach to student well-being, combining education with social services and mental health resources. Critics, however, argue these programs represent a fundamental shift in public education's purpose, potentially diminishing academic focus while expanding government-provided services. The initiative raises important questions about parental rights, as California law permits minors to access certain health services without parental consent. The funding model, which includes Medicaid reimbursements, has also sparked debate about whether community needs or external funding mechanisms drive service priorities. Go to Shastlake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X for a comprehensive analysis. The city of Shasta Lake is finalizing a $1.6 million skate park project and inviting community members to suggest a name via an online form. The park, designed by Los Angeles-based Spawn Ranch, was developed with local input and consultation with skating enthusiasts. Naming guidelines specify preferences for geographic features, significant individuals, or historical references. Names referencing companies, derogatory terms, or duplicating existing Shasta Lake locations will not be considered. Community members can submit name suggestions by April 7th, with additional feedback opportunities available at the April 10th Parks Commission meeting. That's our brief for today, but the news doesn't stop here. Want to know what else is happening in Shasta County? Follow us on social media for exclusive stories and updates. Find us at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X. Until next time, this is your Town Hall Brief.
And we're back. Yeah, little pink houses. Especially with that Bitcoin and the reserves and everything. We could, if it goes to a million, I mean, really? Yeah. We'll have more than just a few pink houses.
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Maybe I have a greenhouse.
All right.
Not figuratively.
Yeah. No, we're not going to be like San Francisco.
Or literally, I should say.
You know,
just
where they all look the same.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to quite do that. But anyway, shall we move along?
Yes. Let's share.
Okay. So, I don't know. There's been talk about people receiving a letter that's it's 6173 from the IRS. You know, you talked about this in the beginning of the show. And it's regarding cryptocurrency transactions. You may want to pay close attention to this because the IRS has been, I guess, sending these notices to taxpayers, and they believe or telling them that they have incorrectly reported cryptocurrency income. Imagine that.
This is your friend, the IRS, right?
Yes.
And a friend, you know, you may have just incorrectly reported your taxes.
Yeah, well, this has happened in the past, not with cryptocurrency, but they sent out letters of $600 that you owed $600.
Right.
And most of the people paid it because they're so afraid of the IRS, and it wasn't true. And they just wanted to see how much money they could collect. So there you go. So in this letter, and you have to learn how to read these letters too. People don't usually pay that close attention, but it requests that you review your tax filing and sign an affidavit under the penalty of perjury confirming the accuracy. And you're saying, well, yeah, no, I didn't report it or whatever. However, according to the U.S. tax court advocate, signing this affidavit could potentially be risky. No. Because a lot of times on the letters.
It's an affidavit.
Yeah, well, not only that, but a lot of times on the letters, it'll say, if you disagree with this, you do nothing.
Mm.
And people don't read that part of it, and they see a signature, and they think, oh, my God, you know, I got to sign
right.
it. So just beware. If the IRS later discovers discrepancies in your return, your signature could be used against you and might even lead to fraud charges.
Yeah.
Now, that's one thing you can go to jail for.
Yes.
It is important to understand that taxpayers are not legally required to sign or return this letter. Before taking any action, it is highly recommended that you consult a qualified tax professional who can provide guidance specific to your situation. The goal here is not to avoid tax obligations, but rather to protect yourself from potential legal complication that could rise from hasty response to IRS inquiries.
Yes.
For more information on how to handle cryptocurrency reporting properly, please consult with a certified tax professional.
Yes. Yes. Yep. True.
Yes, yes, in more ways. But back to this, you know, a lot of people, as soon as they get a letter or whatever from, whether it's the IRS or the state or any of those type of government agencies, they freak out, and I understand, and they jump on and want to, they do stuff, and some stuff is very hard, if not impossible, to reverse.
Yeah,
be
to
careful.
Unwind it. Yeah,
yeah it is. So,
yeah.
There you
so,
go.
So, if in doubt, call your tax professional. If you got to spend a few bucks to get some good advice, spend the bucks, because it can cost you a lot more if you don't.
Yes. Don't just willy-nilly sign stuff and send it back to the IRS or the state or anybody.
Yeah.
Get in another opinion.
Well, the financial world is witnessing a remarkable transformation. BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, has once again shifted its stance on cryptocurrency, ushering Bitcoin into the institutional mainstream. James Lavish, in his newsletter over the weekend, called The Informationist, BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF, known as IBIT, made history as the most successful ETF launch ever. And Lavish explains that when investors buy shares of IBIT, BlackRock doesn't simply create new shares out of thin air. Instead, authorized participants purchase the Bitcoin, which is then securely stored by Coinbase custody, ensuring that each ETF share is backed by real cryptocurrency holdings. Okay. Lauren was really excited about this.
Shout out to you,
Lauren, if you're listening. And in a move that sent ripples through the investment community, BlackRock has now begun incorporating IBIT into its model portfolios. And it's just not another investment decision. It's a powerful signal to financial advisors and institutions worldwide that Bitcoin's earned its place alongside traditional assets. And on a personal basis, I was telling you about, you know, our financial friend Felix, who's an RIA, and he has also verified this, that even the most conservative financial managers are moving into incorporating Bitcoin into the portfolios. So this is huge. The impact is huge. Lavish pointed out that hedge funds, sovereign wealth funds, and other institutional players are following BlackRock's lead. And this adoption represents a seismic shift in Bitcoin's journey from just a fringe digital experiment to legitimate asset class. So, that's huge.
It's huge because before they couldn't even really talk about it.
Yeah. Just want to give a shout out to James Lavish for bringing these significant developments to the attention of followers. You can find him on Substack under The Informationist.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Next is a commentary by our famous guy, or one of our favorite guys, Dr. Peter St. Ong, examining the controversial dog.
Doggy.
Deutsche dividend. Proposal making waves in Washington. President Trump and Elon Musk have floated the idea of distributing government savings directly to American taxpayers, while Speaker Johnson pushes back. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Is this a brilliant political strategy or fiscal irresponsibility? Let's dive into the details and economic implications of this potential $5,000 check to taxpayers as part of the Dodge initiative. Here's Peter to explain this.
Is the next move for Doge cutting $5,000 checks to American taxpayers? Last week, Elon Musk floated the idea of sending 20% of Doge savings to American taxpayers in the form of a check, calling it, quote, the spoils of battle. President Trump said he, quote, loves the idea, and his lead economist Kevin Hassett was out pitching it on cable. Speaker Mike Johnson, of course, dismissed it, saying, quote, everybody loves a check, but we have to pay down the credit card, adding hilariously, quote, fiscal responsibility is what we do in Congress. So what is a Doge dividend? The idea is that 80% of the money saved by Doge goes to paying down debt and reducing the deficit, but 20% goes out in the form of a check to every American taxpayer. Depending how much Doge can cut, that could be up to $5,000 per taxpayer. Now, politically, it's a fantastic idea because it can build overwhelming voter support for Doge to the point rhinos and even moderate Democrats have to join. Given the GOP's razor-thin margin in Congress, this can rhino-proof Doge. More important, Doge was created by executive order, meaning it can be canceled by the next Democrat to creep their way into the Oval Office. It takes Congress to make Doge permanent. The counterargument, of course, is what Johnson claims to want: pay down debt. After all, $400 billion is a chunk of change that would reduce annual interest expenses by something like $13 billion a year, which is helpful, but weigh that against a shot at making Doge permanent. The other question is, what would a Doge dividend do to inflation? After all, memories are still fresh of the COVID stimmy checks and the Bidenflation it helped ignite. So first, a Doge dividend isn't even close to the COVID spending orgy. Between 2020 and 2023, $7 trillion in excess spending was dumped out of Washington, all dutifully financed by the Fed. The stimmies were barely a tenth of that. The other $6.2 trillion was under the radar, from bank bailouts to transgender operas in Peru to trillions for racist overpasses and unicorn farts. Moreover, historically, around 70% of stimulus checks are saved or used by Americans to pay down debt. Roughly 0% of government spending is saved. In other words, government spending is three times more inflationary than stimulus checks. Put it together, and a Doge dividend has roughly 60 times less impact on inflation than COVID, maybe a half point in total. But that's where it gets fun, because remember, every dollar of Doge dividend cut five times more in government spending, or is 20% versus 100%. Government spending, that's three times more inflationary than the stimulus checks. That means even with the Doge dividend, it is massively deflationary. Now, in an ideal world, we don't need a dividend because 100% of voters understand government is corrupt and inefficient. Alas, you cut government with the voters you have, dividend and all. If a Doge dividend is the price to rhino-proof Doge, or to make it permanent, it could pay us back for generations of smaller government, lower inflation, and a defunded radical left.
Well, we'll have to catch the news tonight and see if there's anything mentioned about the Doge dividend. So we'll have to see. Next up, we have Preston Pish. He's going to tell us about a stark warning about Bitcoin's transformative power. It's a short clip here, and I think it's worth listening to. It will drive skeptics down the wrong path if they instinctively resist cryptocurrency's fundamental challenge to the status quo. So why don't we go ahead and listen to this?
All right.
Something like this that takes the control out of the issuer and is actually just a fair terms of terms and conditions for both parties is a total game changer. Anybody who's an honest broker is going to look at them and be like, that's exactly what I want.
The funny thing with that is, and it's a little bit like the strategic reserve, in that the countries that I think would probably stand to benefit from this the most are the people like Russia, China, even like North Korea. It's the sort of pariah states. And it seems, to me at least, that the US has almost the most to lose because of the US dollar. Do you think they're thinking like that?
So there's a really famous book called Only the Paranoid Survive. This was one of Steve Jobs' favorite books. And, I mean, the premise of the book is either you can cannibalize yourself or you can have somebody else come in and do it for you. And right now, what I would tell anybody from anywhere in the world that's listening to this is, yeah, the U.S. has benefited from dollar dominance, period. But the technology inserts itself and dematerializes competitive advantages. Typically, we're used to seeing this just like at a company to company level. But what you're seeing playing out right now is a technology, a decentralized technology that is dematerializing the state's advantage to exercise the printing press. And if you're a country that just wants to lean into the old way of doing something and not recognize this decentralized technology and move towards that and cannibalize yourself, because when we're looking at the game theory on this, the worst outcome is to fight it as opposed to embrace it. And like that would be my message to, especially to US policymakers, is you can fight this as much as you want. But in my humble opinion, like all you're doing is shooting yourself in the foot even worse by fighting it as opposed to embracing it as early as possible. So, but you have to understand what's playing out. You have to understand the game theory. You have to understand that you are being dematerialized by this decentralized protocol. If you don't understand that, your gut reaction to fight it is going to lead you down the wrong path.
Well, that is absolutely true. Yeah. And even Tucker Carlson had his mind blown. And we've got a segment here. It's probably our longest segment of the show. It's in two parts where he talks with macro analyst Luke Roman, and Tucker grapples with the fundamental nature of our monetary system. And like I say, he's just kind of blown away, and he says, you know, the system feels rigged, and why has gold maintained its value across the millennia, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to play part one of this two-part series, and here we go.
Okay.
Macro analyst and Bitcoin bull Luke Roman was on Tucker Carlson, and Tucker had his mind blown as he was faced with contemplating the nature of our rigged monetary system.
That's why when you've got this dichotomy where for 40 years, you know, from 1974 to 2014, global central banks were buying treasury bonds and they were selling gold.
Why would you ever buy a bond from the same person who can print the currency? I just don't understand that.
If you believe the inflation numbers, and that, like, look, there are...
It's like a rigged system, right? Like the government is issuing the debt, which is held in a specific currency, but that same government prints that currency.
Yeah, and that's why they're so hyper-focused on the Fed managing inflation.
Like,
oh, I know. It's,
it doesn't make any sense. It's kind of a rigged game.
It is.
My ignorance protects me from bad investments because if it doesn't make sense, I'm not that I invest. But
no, and intuition is to be trusted.
Well, that just doesn't make sense.
That was ultimately why I first got an interest in gold.
Because the key question is not, do you get paid back what they owe you? The key question is what you just said, which is, what is the value of what they pay you back? You may get every dime back, but maybe those dimes aren't worth anything.
Well, and that's...
And they determine what the dimes are worth. So it's a rigged deal.
And that wasn't the only time Tucker had his mind blown in the interview. They talked a lot about gold, why it holds so much value, and why it's still valued even today amidst all of our modern technology.
Why would gold, which doesn't have great inherent value, what is gold actually worth? We can't eat it. You can't heat your house with it. Why the stranglehold on human beings from gold? And why did it emerge in these separate cultures, and we know from the archaeological record, on separate continents, had no contact with each other, at roughly the same time they all decided that gold was the most valuable thing? What is that? There is a mystery at the heart of gold, no?
Yeah, I think it ultimately evolved to that because it isn't used for anything, right? So there's something called stock to flow in commodities, if you analyze commodities. And stock to flow is just what is the stock of inventory of that commodity and what is the flow? How much of it do you use a year? And the lower the stock to flow ratio, the more it is a commodity, and the higher stock to flow ratio, the more it is like money. I don't know that these ancient cultures were thinking about gold in terms of stock to flow, but I think ultimately what they were looking at is stock to flow means it keeps well, right? It's the most money-like commodity there is. And that's why I think independently around the world, all these cultures arrived at gold as the savings store of value par excellence.
So interesting. So I said, how weird that gold would be the most enduring store of value because you can't eat it or heat your house with it. And you're saying that's why it's the most enduring.
It's precisely why. It's easily divisible, right? So even in old days using old technology, thousands of years ago, you could divide it into very small amounts. It doesn't rust. And so there were obviously in the old days in particular, very practical applications. You store a bunch of your wealth in wheat and it gets mold and it's all gone. Right? You have a spill, it's all gone. The gold, it's much more portable, it's divisible, it's malleable, it doesn't rust. So there's, I think, some practical things, but I think ultimately it's the most money-like thing with those physical aspects.
And has always been for all recorded history. I do think there's something at the core there that I don't understand, but it's just demonstrable. It's just true.
It's true.
This is precisely the reason why the inherent value argument falls apart. All value is subjective. And the reason gold is still valued so highly today has nothing to do with its industrial use in electronics or jewelry. It's valuable because of its superior monetary properties and its ability to act in an economy as a pure store of value. And as any studied Bitcoiner knows, this is exactly the same monetary properties that Satoshi engineered and improved upon when he created Bitcoin in 2009.
The interview naturally then turned towards the failures of gold as money and even as a global store of value. So let's listen to gold part two on here.
The interview naturally then turned towards the failures of gold as a money and even as a global store of value.
I would say one more thing about gold that I find fascinating is that it is the most private of all currencies. So the great lie of my lifetime is that crypto was going to be private and was going to free us from surveillance and control. And that is just not proven true. And no one's really tried hard to make it true, which tells you a lot about how much people lie and what the real agenda is, which is control. But gold can actually be moved around privately and stored privately. There's not a digital record of gold. And that leads to my question, which is, what the hell is going on with gold flows around the world? Gold physically moving from one country to another. Why isn't that transparent? This is public money. This is the reserves of different countries owned by the public of those countries. And there's no sort of transparent record of it. Am I missing something?
In the end, it isn't very transparent. That's very
How can a country move its part of its gold reserve to another country without telling its population?
Non-monetary gold gets recorded. Monetary gold, to your point, doesn't have to be declared as it moves, is how I understand the rules. And so when you see the monetary gold movements, there is still very much an element of secrecy and non-transparency. And yes, some of that is the public's money, and it's not being disclosed why it's moving and how much exactly.
I guess the only point I'm making again and again is that the heart of this incredibly important phenomenon, the movement of gold around the world, is a lie. There's lie. We don't actually know what the state of play is.
There's not great clarity. No, there's
not great clarity. There's massive lying. And again, whenever there's massive lying, there's going to be massive fraud.
So Tucker starts by saying that gold is so great because it's private, meaning you can hold it and choose not to disclose to anyone that you own it or where you've hidden it. But then he wrongly claims that the big lie of crypto was that it was private and that it would free us from surveillance and control. This was never the original intention behind the first and only successful attempt at decentralized peer-to-peer money in Bitcoin. Satoshi clearly states in the white paper that he made Bitcoin in order to remove the control of money via third parties. He didn't create it so that we could have private transactions. We already had cash and physical gold for that. Satoshi created it to take the control and creation of money out of the hands of governments and central banks.
Boom.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tick tock, another block.
Isn't it interesting that we've been questioning, so where is the gold? And,
uh-huh.
And we loan it out and we borrow it from other countries, and that movement doesn't have to be recorded. Did I hear that right?
That's what he said, if it's monetary.
Wow.
Isn't that scary?
No wonder he's skeptical. Well,
no
like
wonder
the rest
they
of
don't want to open
so
the door.
He's so articulate, yes.
No wonder they're going, yeah. No, you can't open the door.
Well, we've had a lot of content tonight. I mean, we've gone from the AI evolution, you know, how our computer networks, mining networks are being shared, if you will, to allow for AI operations. So this is how miners I think they're cutting losses and making gains in other areas. And we hopefully we'll have better mining equipment. No doubt there's better mining equipment. So it's imperative that there's upgrades and consolidations. It's just amazing. And
still a little scary where it could go, you know. That's a lot of power.
And next week we'll talk about the strategic crypto reserve. I'm sure it's being talked about tonight. So we'll come back and report on that next week. And then the Doge dividend. Hopefully we'll hear something about that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that?
Just send it to me in Bitcoin. I would be happy about that. So
yeah.
We're okay.
Yep. I guess with that, we're probably at the end of the show. We want to thank you, and we will see you next time.
Have a great week.
Yep. Take care.
Bye.
This train is bound for glory. plenty of room for all. Well, Satoshi Nakamoto, that's the name I love to say. And we don't know much about him, but he came to save the day. When he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be, he gave us all a protocol this world had never seen. Oh, Bitcoin, as you're going into the old blockchain. Oh, Bitcoin, I know you're going to rain, till everybody knows, till everybody knows.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.